It's time for our fortnightly checkups with pharmacist Elizabeth Roddick from New Life Pharmacy in Glasgow. Hello, Elizabeth, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Hello, Toby.
It has been a very busy week with news about many different vaccines becoming available soon. Can you tell us about some of the different vaccines?
The first one was the announcement about the Pfizer one being about 90% effective, followed by the Moderna vaccine, probably about 95% effective. Now, in actual fact, there are about 300 different vaccines being developed. When I was looking this up, I was quite amazed. Now, with the average time for development of a vaccine being about 10 years, it's really quite remarkable that the scientists have got to this stage. And one of the reasons I was reading up is that the adenoviral vector vaccine with the Ebola platform technology, now that's being used for some of the COVID-19 vaccines. So they're sort of a step ahead. Now, there are, however, two major hurdles in order for vaccines to meet the regulations for licensing. And that is efficacy. By that, I mean, do they work? And secondly, of course, their safety profile.
And with the Pfizer vaccine, will pharmacies be involved in the rollout for vaccinating people?
Matt Hancock said recently that pharmacists will have an important role to play in delivering the vaccine. There are, of course, particular logistical obstacles to overcome, such as the storage, talking about minus 70 for the Pfizer vaccine, but others are more in normal traditional, just keeping them in a fridge. And they are also talking about perhaps preparing a powder form, which would then be reconstituted. And that would mean literally storage could be up to maybe a year, 2 years. Now, what we're thinking about is space, short of space. A lot of pharmacies in general are really small areas. One idea that's been mooted is that contractors or pharmacy owners could hire out staff to help give the vaccine where local areas are struggling with capacity. Now, the involvement of pharmacy has been announced in England. As of today, we've not heard about Scotland. That's maybe coming online.
And do you think pharmacies will be able to get the vaccine early on?
Well, again, looking at the English model, it's proposed that pharmacists would come third in line with other healthcare staff. And that's after care home residents and the over 80s. These are the most vulnerable people. We really need to get them vaccinated first. Now, it's interesting, where I work in Glasgow, we've not been allowed to vaccinate our pharmacy staff with the flu vaccination. Maybe with our private vaccine service, it was presumed we would use our own vaccines rather than the NHS ones. But by the time that directive had been made, certainly in my case, all my private vaccines had been booked out. Really, there's been unprecedented demand. I find that very disappointing. Once again, community pharmacies, they're not regarded as frontline health professionals. And that prompted me to write a diary, Tommy, about my experience of COVID-19 and make a short film, The Other Frontline, because I'm just actually quite annoyed about how we've sort of been forgotten about in all of this.
It's a real shame, isn't it? And there are people out there who have said they don't want to get the vaccine. Have you heard that, and what would you say to them?
Yeah, we call it vaccine hesitancy, Toby. And as you say, it's a reluctance or indeed refusal to get vaccinated despite availability. Now, many people will remember the 1998 study of the childhood MMR vaccine, where the research suggested a link to autism. And despite that research being discredited, it did result in a drop, an uptake drop from 91% to 54%. And although numbers are getting up there, getting the vaccine, they've increased, it still hasn't reached the pre-research percentages. Now, one recent study in London suggested that 22% of people said they were unlikely to get the vaccination, with 20% saying they felt they would wait to be sure that future problems wouldn't arise. And in fact, 15% suggested that vaccines don't actually work. Now, I believe the government is so concerned about misinformation and fake news, they're trying to lobby the online giants to curb these announcements.
And it's also been talked about that there's a certain number of people that need to get the vaccine for the so-called herd immunity to kick in. Is that true?
Yeah, some scientists talk about 60%, others really 80%. It is important, as you say, to get a certain number, a certain percentage of the population to be vaccinated. Also, immunity can be acquired through having had the virus. Now, that's called natural acquired immunity. So that's the two ways to be able to get this herd immunity up to the standard it should be. So it's either the natural acquired immunity or through vaccination, which is what we're talking about.
And there's also the condition called long COVID. Can you explain what that is and how it might affect people?
It's where the person hasn't recovered, sometimes weeks after contracting the virus. They either have the symptoms we know about, cough, temperature, loss of appetite, sense of smell. What they have is they have it much longer than others, and they've already recovered or they begin experiencing long-term symptoms. For example, fatigue, breathlessness, brain fog. And it was interesting, there was a recent webinar by the BME and a doctor talked about like being battered repeatedly and said he realised his symptoms were out of the ordinary after reading on the NHS website at that time that this would last 2 weeks. But he said after 6 weeks, he was still really unwell. And that's gone on for 6 months. And another health professional on this webinar, an associate professor in public health, she suggested that her symptoms from March had still going on. She says it wasn't until she read about this Paul Garner's experience of long COVID that she felt validated. She started writing about how to quantify and measure long COVID in the same way as death and infection. And it reminds me a bit, Toby, of the ME scenario where that really wasn't recognised for some time. And some of the symptoms, as I suggested, persistent cough, hoarse voice, headache, loss of appetite, shortness of breath, but not fever in the first week. So what they're saying is long COVID generally has to be the symptoms of headache and fatigue. These are the most common symptoms. And many people have not necessarily had a fever or cough. People with strong antibody responses seem to have longer long COVID symptoms. Those with acute fever who clear it quicker don't seem to get these long-term symptoms. And it tends to be in females of all ages. I was looking to see if people wanted more information. There is a really good website. It's called yourcovidrecovery.nhs.uk. And it does give you a lot of information. If you think you're in that category, you've had COVID-19 and you're just not recovering.
Wow, that's something very useful for people to look up. And also, Elizabeth, if people want more information and perhaps want some advice, where can they go to find you?
All the W's, newlifepharmacy.co.uk.
Thank you, Elizabeth Roddick from New Life Pharmacy in Glasgow, for chatting with me here on R&IB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Toby.